And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every single episode of Star Wars Rebels. But not yet, because we're not quite there. We are continuing our canon dive, where we are covering materials between canon materials between Clone Wars and Rebels to connect the two shows together, so you have, like, extra stuff for Clone Wars and backgrounds of Rebels, and yeah! Oh, we have a new intro by now, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Oh, yay! And I heard it, I liked it.
This will be the third episode with the new... Yeah, the third episode with the new intro and new outro.
Oh, yeah! Since we record so far ahead, I actually just heard it for the first time this week, so I was just like, yay! Because I think, what, the Ahsoka episode is coming out this week?
Yes, that will be the first, that's the first Rebels, J-Guys and Jedi, officially, technically.
I'll have to promote it on Twitter like that, like, new intro, new stuff, same old classiness, or something like that.
Oh, yeah, Gene classed it up.
He did. I liked it. Thank you again, Gene, because I know you're listening, because you listen to every podcast on Teacher Freak. So thank you again, Gene, for doing it for us. Gene, the podcast machine. Gene.
Thank you, Gene.
He always listens on, like, double speed, so that's why he's talking slow, in case you don't know. Well, how you doing, Chris?
Not bad.
That's good. I've had a pretty chill week. I actually, to get ready for this podcast, I've been writing since, like, 11 a.m., so my eyes hurt. Because I knew, like, I haven't had the last few Mondays off, so the last few podcast outlines I had too early, especially that Monster Thrawn one. Oh, my God. So this one, I did most of it today, and I've been writing since, like, 11 a.m., but I hope you enjoyed it, because I had fun this time, and it's about a book that I really love.
Not as much as the last one, though.
I love it in a completely different way.
About half as much, I'm speculating. I'm just
funny.
Going by length of episode.
It's funny, actually, because, who was it? We got some feedback on Twitter, and I think it's Paul C. Kelly. Let me double check, but I'm pretty sure it's Paul C. Kelly. I was writing on Twitter about recording for the Thrawn episode last week and how I was, like, paying for it the following day because my throat was just shot. Like, last Tuesday, I had trouble talking because my throat hurt so much. It is Paul C. Kelly. And I wrote, my voice is so raw today, but it was worth it. We spent 3 hours discussing the novel Thrawn last night. Totally worth it for my Blue Husbando and Space Watson. This episode will be out in a few weeks. And Paul C. Kelly wrote me back saying, now are you topping Rex, LOL? And I wrote back, Thrawn and Rex are like bacon and tomatoes. Two of them are my favorite foods, but I love them for very different reasons. And that's how I feel about this tonight. Like, by the way, guys, I should probably tell you, we're talking the current Darth Vader comic by Charles Soule tonight. And I love the novel Thrawn, but I love this comic. For a very long time, Kanan the Last Padawan was my favorite of the new Marvel comics until this book came out. And this book is bonkers and crazy and so good, and there's not a bad issue. Like, even probably the worst issue, which was one of the annuals, which I don't even think I covered in this, wasn't bad. It's like saying that chocolate is bad. That chocolate is worse than fudge. I mean, every, like, issue is so good, and the artwork is gorgeous and just amazing. And I'm very excited to talk about Darth Vader tonight. And Chris is very excited just to sit here and listen.
That's what I do.
These episodes must be for so now, easy for you.
They're easy at this point. Yeah. I get to do all my work in the editing, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And this week I did it differently because I wrote it up in my style of writing episode summaries, so that's always fun.
Yeah, there's no prep for me on these ones. It's spoiling me.
I get to do my Palpatine voice tonight.
Excellent.
That I almost just knocked over my drink. Let me move it. There we go. Well, just like Cannon Dives, I want to give you the spiel in the beginning. If it's your first time listening, if you were like, oh, I like the Darth Vader comics, I want to listen to this episode, and you haven't listened to our other Cannon Dives, I want to give you the spiel first. So here we go. We are covering Between Clone Wars and Rebels, current canon material at the time of this recording. There is just so much in the extended universe and so much in Legends and so much in EU that if we covered all the Clone Wars and pre-Rebels content in that time period, Chris and I would be here forever, and plus the extended universe is just not mine and Chris's forte at all in any way, shape, or form. So now we're not covering all material that's in between this time. Like, we're covering the novel Tarkin, because the novel Tarkin, to my knowledge, because I haven't read it, just from what I've seen on round, doesn't directly impact Star Wars Rebels outside the Death Star, but the Death Star impacts, like, all of Star Wars, so whatever. So we're only doing canon material that directly impacts Rebels now, because we've already finished Clone Wars. If you want to learn more about the extended universe, hold on, I need a cough. First you cough, and then I would suggest watching The Lore Master or Star Wars Explained on YouTube. Both are wonderful YouTube channels. They do a really good job of breaking down both canon and extended universe material. So if you want to look into that more, I suggest them. Also, we're covering the Darth Vader comic tonight, and Star Wars Explained hasn't done this with, like, really any other comic. This is probably his favorite comic, and he's covered almost every single issue of this book, and he usually doesn't do that. So there's a lot of material about on Star Wars Explained about this particular comic that we're discussing tonight, if you want to see that. And he goes into way more detail than we're going to be going into. He connects it to other stuff in the universe. I do suggest that. And finally, if you're listening to our Canon for the first time, hi, welcome. My name's Hope, that's Chris. We do stuff. We are going to be talking spoilers. I'm going to be going point by point discussing the main plot of this, and characters, and deaths, and stuff like that. So if you want to read the Darth Vader comic without being spoiled, this is your warning. Stop listening now. If not, I'm ready to get started. Are you, Chris?
I am.
You know, cream soda was a very bad choice for my drink tonight because I love cream soda, but I'm super burpy now.
It's not the most, like, vocal lubricant either. It's just sort of it's almost like liquid cotton candy or something.
I know, but I also have water too. I have both. And it's not even, it's like a big K brand, so it's not like real cream soda. It's off brand, so it's like weirdly sweet.
A little funky.
Yeah, it's almost like slightly rotten vanilla, but it was cheap and on sale than normal cream soda I would normally
rotten
get.
Vanilla flavor.
Yeah, I mean, it's palatable.
All right, high praise for the off-brand cream soda.
Way to go, Big K.
Palatable.
You made a rotten vanilla flavor.
Rotten vanilla. Palatable rotten vanilla flavor.
Yeah, I mean, you know how there's a different taste between, like, sugar and sweetener? It tastes like sweetener, not sugar.
Right, yeah.
It tastes like sweetener, and that's what it tastes like. So, like, I keep, like, putting it in my mouth, I'm just like, yay, cream soda,
Sorta. Cream soda.
Hey, I like it! Cream soda! I like it, Chris, I like it.
Thank you.
Are you ready to get into the Darth Vader comic?
I am ready.
Alright, so, currently there are 4 volumes of it. I have every volume broken down by part. Like we have volume 1, volume 2, volume 3, and volume 4. Did I do it with three of them? Two of the volumes I've broken into two parts because there's two different storylines on them. So, well, you ready?
I am.
I will as soon as I scroll back up to the top of the page. There we go. All right. Star Wars Darth Vader, Dark Lord of Sith, is an ongoing comic book series published by Marvel Comics that was released on June 7, 2017. And it's one of Hope's favorite current things running in Marvel comics and Star Wars right now, and all of those right now. The series is written by Charles Soule and drawn by, I am so sorry, Mr. Artist, I am literally about to butcher your name so bad.
Giuseppe? Yep, like, he should actually, that should be the name of the third Mario brother.
Okay.
Giuseppe
Camuncoli.
Camuncoli.
Giuseppe
Camuncoli.
I'm so sorry. The first issue begins with Star Wars during Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, after
Darth Camuncoli.
Darth Yeller is going to take him out back and shoot him.
Darth Camuncoli. Hey. Hey, Giuseppe.
Oh, my goodness. It starts and I can't read. This is what happens when you've been writing since 11 a.m. and your brain doesn't work anymore. After Darth Vader yells out, "No!" at the realization of a situation in Padme Amidala, the series will conclude with issue 25, which will be released December 19th, 2018. So just know, we're covering everything that's out so far. There's still two issues left, so we're going to cover what we have so far. All right, volume one.
I'm ready.
Volume 1 is called Imperial Machine. The comic opens with Vader as we see him at the end of Episode 3. He has a fancy new suit, and Palpatine's all like, "Rise, my apprentice." And Vader's like, "Where's my wife?" And Palpatine says that Vader killed her in his rage. It's so much better than the long, "No!" from the movies. Vader breaks off his thing and goes, "No!" and throws Palpatine in the wall and holding him there, force choking them, saying that Palpatine promised that Padme would live. Well, Papa Palpatine is all like, "Boo, you have a great gift now. Pain! Pain is wonderful. Now let me down off this silly wall and we'll talk like adults, you stupid child." And Vader lets him down, and Palpatine's all like, "Psych!" and shocks him with Force lightning. And Vader better not use Force on Palpatine like that ever again, or else. Now that they beat up on each other a little bit, and they're frenemies again, they go out to a balcony and watch as Mos Amita gives a big speech about how the Jedi suck, and the galaxy is better off without their tyranny. And they watch clone troopers dump a bunch of lightsabers into a furnace, including Yoda's lightsaber, by the way, in case you're wondering. And Palpatine asks Vader if he knows why Sith lightsabers are red. The Jedi were so unnerved by the information that they buried it away and hid it from Jedi teachings. So Vader doesn't know. So to get a Sith lightsaber, you have to take a kyber crystal from a lightsaber and quote-unquote bleed it by pouring anger, pain, hate, and all the dark side feelings into it. Palpatine can't just give Vader a lightsaber. He has to go find a Jedi and take it from them. And Vader's like, "Bro, we just, like, killed all the Jedi? Like, really, dude? Where am I gonna find one of these?" And Palpatine's like, "Figure it out." So Vader sets off to find a Jedi somewhere out in the galaxy to get a brand new lightsaber. There's a little side quest mission in this issue where some pirates steal his ship and then he kills the pirates. Not really important. But there is one part of that I really do like where Vader is getting used to his suit. So he arrives on this planet and he's clicking through the viewfinders and they're different colors. And I kid you not, he settles on the rose colors because Vader likes rose-colored glasses. That's not a joke. Happens in the comics, and I laughed.
He's a positive guy.
He's a rose-colored positive guy. So out in space in an old Jedi outpost, a bunch of precious baby clones are tasked with destroying the Jedi artifacts, And they're all mean now because they killed their Jedi commanders, but they're still being cute, dumb boys, and they're playing with the lightsabers and going whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. And they're also super hopeful for the future because they won the Clone Wars, and they're the strongest army in the galaxy. They have no idea that Palpatine will phase them out for stormtroopers, but they're happy and hopeful now. Suddenly, they get readings of an incoming ship, and the ship refuses to give them clearance codes, so they just assume that it's an enemy. And in walks Vader, who could have totally told these clones that he's on their side and just wants to get one of those sweet lightsabers. Nope. Vader kills all the clones, and the clones die thinking that he was a Jedi. But Vader doesn't take these lightsabers that are just laying around on the ship. He finds a droid, and that Eustace, I realize I missed this part now. He has a droid. But the droid, he brought a droid with him to access the data bank. But I wrote that this droid used to serve the Jedi, but he actually brought a droid to access the data bank. And he forces the droid to look up who last took the Bearish Vow. Okay, straight from Wikipedia, here we go. The Bearish Vow is an oath taken by a Jedi, who has completely refrained from all activities related to the Jedi Order as a form of penitence. Say the word, Chris.
Penitence.
Thank you, because apparently I can't talk.
The penitent man from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Penitent. Disengaging from anything but the Force itself. Okay, so that's the Wikipedia thing. They don't deal with Jedi bullshit or politics or war. Their job is to focus on that sweet, sweet Force. Now, it's not confirmed in the book, but I took it like this. This is also a designated survivor scenario. So if, like, something ever happened, they have a Jedi that can restart the Order. That's how I took it. That's not confirmed, but that's how I saw this.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And Vader gets the name Kirak Infila, and he sets out to find him. Okay, guys, I need to talk to you about Kirak. Kirak is a Jedi. He's a Jedi Knight. And before he took his vow, he believes that his sole purpose in life was to fight. That's why he has the Force, was to fight. He loves fighting. That's his jam. And this guy, so you can get a nice image of him, he has the face of Odin. He has this long white beard and this long white hair, and he's an old man. But his body, he has the body of fucking Thor. Like Chris Hemsworth Thor. And he is jacked. And he spins the entire comic shirtless, and it's like, welcome to the gun show, because look at these beefed up arms, and he has like a 20 pack for abs. Like, he is fucking ripped. Like Thor. So Kirak is hanging out at a Jedi monastery with his droid, Arex, where they train and practice fighting, and they build traps together. And just so you know, the monastery is near a dam, and there's a town down below the dam. And he has sensed that Order 66 has happened, and he knows that there's something wrong with the galaxy, and something is probably going to be coming for him. Well, Vader arrives, and they start a huge battle that lasts for several comics. Kirak is easily overpowering Vader in combat, and he has these traps off that are slowing Vader down, and some carnivorous birds come, and they get at Vader. And Kirak says that Vader isn't skilled enough to be a Sith Master. Because Vader's only been a Sith Lord for, like, a week at this time. And that's not me over-exaggerating. It's maybe been a week. So he's still getting used to his body and stuff. So Kirak will kill Vader and then find his master and defeat him. Finally, after several fights lasting several issues, Kirak's droid, Arex, off the dam. And then Kirak finally stops Vader by ripping off his cybernetic leg. And he damages Vader's cybernetic arms. And then he throws Vader off a cliff. And Vader falls to the bottom of the cliff. And Kirak is, like, awesome. And one of my absolutely favorite moments of the comic, and, like, this was one of the first moments where I got chills watching it, because it's a gorgeous series of panels. Vader is laying at the bottom of the cliff, and he's all broken up from his fight, and he doesn't have a leg. Well, the droid Arex is all busted down there too, but he is still taunting Vader, and he's all like, you lost, haha, we beat you. And using nothing but willpower and the Force, no tools, just willpower and the Force. Vader uses the Force to completely dismantle Arrak and rebuild his own body.
I'm Pickle Anakin, bitches.
Meanwhile, I meant to write Kirax, but I wrote Arrak. Kirax is getting ready to leave, and he's talking to some of the people in town when he senses Vader. The fight resumes at the top of the dam, but Kirax shows his Jedi hand when some guards show up to help him. Vader shoves them from the dam, and Kirax catches them with the Force, but his compassion has become his weakness. Vader starts breaking the dam, and Kirax begs him to take his life but spare the town. Vader responds by taking Kirax's lightsaber and making the Jedi watch as he breaks the dam open and floods the city below. He breaks Kirax's neck and throws him into the newly formed lake. Victorious, Vader takes his lightsaber, hops on a ship, and goes to Mustafar, where Palpatine had told him about a dark side cave, which we will come back into a later book, so just remember that there's a dark side cave on Mustafar. As Vader tries to corrupt the Kyber crystal, it fights back and throws him against the wall. And it's actually a really cool moment because, like, Vader is sitting there, and you know how his, like, Sith eyes are yellow? The helmet has, like, the visors on his helmet has busted open, and his eyes are blue, and he's just sitting there like, what have I done? It's like a very brief moment of Anakin. But not really, because it's actually a vision, but it did psych me out. The crystal has shown Vader visions of a possible different path he could take. He could renounce the dark side, go kill Palpatine, and the final vision is him coming to Obi-Wan, taking off his helmet, and begging for forgiveness. But when Obi-Wan says the name Anakin, Vader snaps out of the vision and uses all his powers to corrupt the crystal and makes a huge storm on Mustafar. Back on Coruscant, Papa Palpatine is meeting with Tarkin, a.k.a. Farkin, as we call him on this podcast, short for fucking Tarkin. And he's also meeting with Mos Amita about the Death Star's construction. Because it's only been like a week or something into the Empire and no one other than Palpatine has seen Vader, everyone in the room, including the guards, freak out when Vader walks into the room. And he shows Papa Palpatine his lightsaber, and Papa Palps is like, that bitchin'. Later, Vader is chilling in a Bacta tank because he got his ass beat up by Thorn. He uses the Force to repair his own Vader suit. Meanwhile, there's a mysterious walking around the old Jedi library, griping about how it was all lies. He's finally going to get to settle, get what is entitled to him, and all the Jedi suck. And he touches a Jedi Temple guard suit in a glass case with repulsion. Vader gets the alert about the intruder and goes to check it out. When he finds him in the library, the intruder is all like, no, this knowledge was promised to me. And they fight, while the intruder pulls out a double-sided lightsaber that also spins. He throws off his cloak, and it's the Grand Inquisitor from Star Wars Rebels. Palpatine stops the fight before Vader can kill him and goes, oh, Vader, by the way, I forgot to tell you about the Inquisitorius. Oops, my mistake. Let's go meet the new Inquisitors. Palpatine takes Vader and the Grand Inquisitor to a secret training place where all the other Inquisitors are. And there are more now than what we see in Rebels. 11 at this point that are in canon that we are recording right now. But I want that one of the Inquisitors might not be canon because they're from an RPG game. It's a way I don't know if that's actually if that's actually canon. And we still don't know who at this point, who Inquisitors 1 through 4 is. Or the Grand Inquisitor is considered number 1. So there's still a lot of questions about Inquisitors that we still don't have answered at the time. And all the Inquisitors see Vader and they're like, who the hell is this guy? And the Grand Inquisitor says it's their brand new master. And Vader is like, Palps, who are these guys? And why do they have lightsabers? And why are they Force sensitive? I don't understand. And Palpatine says that they were all once Jedi who had become disillusioned with the Jedi Order. So remember in the last Ahsoka arc in the Clone Wars where she was framed for murder? Anakin had told her that there were Jedi who disagree with the war, people like Barriss, or they had fallen from the Order, people like Krell and Dooku. So yeah, that's who these guys are. They're all ex-Jedi. And Palpatine says that Vader is to train them, and they have one mission. defeat the remaining Jedi. Volume 1 ends with a picture of Jedi librarian Jakasanu sitting and meditating and hiding. Alright, well, so what do you think of Volume 1, Vader versus Thor?
I like it. I like that they had some sort of, like, steroid Jedis hidden away just in case, who are ready to kick everybody's ass.
I think it's, like, because I was reading a little bit about Barishval, that there's not a lot about it, but something like 14, I think, like, 1,000 Jedi or more than that has taken the vow over the time. And I doubt that they're all, like, fucking ripped like Thor, but, like, this guy was like, oh, I love fighting! There's actually a great moment where, like, Vader shows up, and he's all like, we don't have to fight, and Vader's like, yeah, we do, and he's like, oh, well, my vow is ending right now. Let's fight!
Yeah, I imagine his vow is pretty much up in the air at that point.
Yeah, and people don't build towns like right at the bottom of dams.
Why,
like,
do they always do that? Right in a valley, right under a dam. Yep.
It literally is like the town is built into the dam. I never got that in media. Like, I can understand like further downstream, but like right at the bottom of the dam.
Yeah, it's not going to end well.
The moment I saw a dam, I was like, huh, people are going to die.
Chekhov's dam. Yep.
And it's interesting because, like, we also get the introduction of the Inquisitorius, which it was fun when I remember when I was first reading this, because, you know, we know about the seventh sister and the fifth brother and the Grand Inquisitor from the show. And we meet another one, like, in Twilight of the Apprentice. But we only knew about four of them. So as I was reading this and I flipped the page and I saw how many Inquisitors there are, there's like 11 of them. And I was just like, look at them all! And it's just kind of funny because, like, we know that there was like some Jedi that didn't like the war and were disillusioned with the Order, which makes sense because we saw like Krell and Barriss and we knew Dooku left. But like, know that there's that many that Palpatine's probably been whispering in their ear for a while now, and it's just super interesting that he's been planning this for so long.
Yeah, he probably made sure there were a lot of, he was probably just monitoring everybody who was coming in to look for ones who would be good Inquisitors.
And I have to wonder, like, if they were considered possible backups if, say, like, Anakin got shot in the Clone Wars and died or something.
Yeah, you'd have to always have multiples just in case. Because you always had to have one, so...
And we know that Dooku was a tool, so he was probably planning on getting rid of Dooku as soon as he could.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Grand Inquisitor is so much cooler than Dooku. Sorry, Dooku. You have silk robes. But, yeah, I love everything. I remember, like, when I first saw the cover of the Grand Inquisitor, I, like, screamed in my store because I was just like, he's got it! I just didn't know that at the time that they were going to be diving into this and stuff like that. Actually, I sort of did, because not this, like, a couple of Dragon Cons ago when I asked Henry Gilroy, I was like, well, will we learn more about the new Inquisitors and stuff like that, or about the Inquisitorius? He was like, well, yeah, just keep an eye out coming up, because you're going to learn a lot more about them. So I just didn't know where they were going to be coming from. The great cover of just like the Grand Inquisitor standing over Vader holding a lightsaber to his throat. I was just like, yes.
Yeah, I like seeing this era of Vader in his early, you know, probably most angry period ever.
Yeah, I mean, so much of this first volume is also Vader just kind of getting used to his suit. Like, I kind of brushed over it when I said that, like, Vader was sitting in a Bacta tank since he got his ass kicked by Thor. But really what really happened in that scene was, like, Palpatine is looking at his lightsaber and Anakin's in the back of the tank. And he's like, I'll get a mechanical droid to fix your suit. And Vader's eyes just, like, flare in anger. And Palpatine senses it and he's like, no, you're right. You're a mechanic. You can fix your own suit and make it to the way you like it. And so he leaves, and Anakin's just, like, relaxes back to tank, and he uses the Force to start fixing his suit. And when the Inquisitor, the Grand Inquisitor, comes in, he's actually replacing the lenses of his helmet. So it's really cool because, like, Vader's like, don't touch my shit, Palpatine! And he's very, like, particular about how things are.
I would imagine he would be.
Yeah. So
I would be.
Yeah.
have to live in it 24/7.
Yeah. And I think it was... It might be Extended Universe stuff. It might be canon. I don't remember. But I think it was the Lore Master who was talking about how Palpatine purposely made Vader's suit uncomfortable.
Right, yeah.
It was something that he would... Like, no matter how much he repaired it, it would never be comfortable. But it was a requirement because, like, Anakin's lungs were damaged on Mustafar, so he had to live in his suit at all times. But it was something that, like, Nomad, like, the only time he was ever comfortable was, like, in his Bacta tank. It was the only time he was not in pain. Because Palpatine purposely made the suit to hurt him.
Yeah, which is, keep him hungry.
Like a good lord. Yeah, this was just such a fun opening, and just everything from... I just so many red flags, because, like, Vader uses the Force on Palpatine in the opening, and, like, Palpatine's like, now let me down, and then he shocks him with Force lightning, and I feel like Vader should just be like, second thoughts, but he, I mean, what else does he have?
He doesn't have much choice, yeah.
Yeah, he has nowhere else to turn, and that actually comes up a lot in this. Like, there's so many times where, like, Vader is meditating throughout the course of the entire series. I only talk about it once in this review, but... Over the course of the entire series, there's scenes where, like, Vader's meditating, and we see him have images of people like Obi-Wan, and, like, asking for forgiveness, and then pushing it away and shoving it away, or, like, Padme coming into him saying that he can be good again, and he pushes that idea away. It actually happens multiple times throughout the series, and every time I'm just like, ugh, I want the Anakin to come back, but you know he is not going to. It's still gonna always be Vader.
Nope, not till Jedi.
Not till Jedi. But that's all I really have for Volume 1. Did you have anything else?
Nope.
Alright, so, we're talking about Volume 2 now. It's called Legacy's End. And, remember, gosh, it was the Sifo Dyas episode, the lost one, when Jocasta Nu showed up, and I was like, Jocasta Nu's a motherfucking badass! Remember that?
Yes.
Now you're gonna find out why. Here we go. And just so you know, because Volume 2 has two separate stories in it, I split them up in a Part 1 and Part 2. So Volume 2, Part 1. Volume 2 opens with the sixth brother on his knees, and his arm is smoking on the ground nearby. By the way, the sixth brother is the Inquisitor that faces off against Ahsoka in her title novel that we talked about a few weeks ago, in case you're wondering who this is. Anyway, Vader has cut off his arm while training to teach him about loss. And a Grand Inquisitor looks at all his new Inquisitors, either missing limbs, or they're getting tended to by medical droids. And Grand, who I'm just going to call him Grand for the rest of this, because it's so much easier to say than Grand Inquisitor. Grand is like, dude, you need to stop cutting off people's arms. And Vader's like, this is Star Wars. Everyone who's cool loses a limb at some point. It's what all the cool people do. The end. I'm kidding, that's not the end. Vader says that all the Inquisitors suck. And Grand is like, they were all former Jedi. They're some of the best fighters in the galaxy. And Vader explains that because they're ex-Jedi, they fight like Jedi, which isn't going to help them when they're hunting Jedi. They need to change and learn how to adapt. And Grand is all snippy like, well, if you're going to rule over us like that and we fail, it's going to be your failure too, bro. And Vader's like, whatever, bro. The Force will guide us. Which is actually something he said, which I thought was a pretty interesting line coming from a Sith Lord. That the Force will be their guide? It's odd, because you always hear that line from Jedi, but to hear it coming from, like, a Sith Lord, I was just like, huh. Yeah, they believe in that shit too. Cool, whatever. And Grand shows Vader a list that he's had for some time now. And Vader doesn't like that this list was kept from him. And it's a list of Jedi who possibly survived the Jedi Purge. There's a lot of key names on this list of people that we know about, like Yoda and Ahsoka. Funnily enough, Obi-Wan is not on this list, but it's like Yoda and Ahsoka. And one is Quinlan Voss. And he's somebody who has also toiled with the dark side, as we saw back in the novel Dark Disciple when we talked about it a few weeks ago. But the Emperor has highlighted one name on the list in particular. Jocasta Nu, the old librarian who oversaw the temple's library, and Mr. Grand, hates that bitch because she never let him read the good shit that he wanted to read. He doesn't know why the Emperor has highlighted her name of all people. He can't remember ever seeing her fight. But if that's their first target, they'll go after her. Well, meanwhile, Jocasta has been hiding out on a planet, and she has a little aide friend named Gar. She spent the last all the time filling holocrons and data disks with as much knowledge about the Jedi that she could. They've been building a hidden lair in a cave full of knowledge to restart the Jedi Order, a new school for the future. Gar tells her that as she places the last holocron that they can go hide away, that her work is finished. But Jocasta picks up her lightsaber to surprise. She finished the knowledge side of this, but she has one more mission. This is supposed to be a school. It needs students. Back on Coruscant, Grand is still bitching about how much he hates Jocasta New, and she's the worst, and she never let him have his way, and she thought that education was for the elite, but no more. He's gonna read every goddamn book in this library now. And he can't wait to kill her. And I just read the goddamn library book line too soon because I skipped ahead, and sometimes I vince off this and vamp and go. And Vader literally has no fucks to give about all this. And he gives Grand the task of looking into where surviving Jedi might go while hiding, whether they have friend connections or family connection. And Grand is like, fuck yes! Books! Books! I get to read the books! And Vader goes to Papa Palps, and he asks, why hunt Jocasta New of all people? And Papa Palpatine explains that Papa Palpatine explains that when the Jedi took shrines, when they found halls of power, and they took artifacts, both Jedi and Sith artifacts, every single one came through Jocasta New. She knows about Sith artifacts that not even Palpatine has ever heard of. She knows what they are and where they're hidden. And Palpatine says it's super important not to tell the other Inquisitors about this knowledge because they're not Sith. This knowledge is just for Palpatine and Vader. So Palpatine gives Vader a very important task. He is to save Jocasta New's life so they can use her to get her knowledge. Well, meanwhile, Jocasta has returned to Coruscant and snuck back into the Jedi Temple through secret passageways. She's so hurt and upset to see the temple completely in ruins. Then she gets a call from her astromech droid that rode with her on her ship that the Coruscant guards have found it. She tells the droid that she will adjust her plan and say goodbye to it. The droid sets the ship to explode just as the guards come into the room. Well, this explosion catches the attention of the Imperial Security Bureau, or the ISB, who gather the wreckage together. The captain dude, leading the investigation, finds a Jedi insignia in the wreckage. I don't know why she didn't take off that goddamn thing, because that would have saved her. Under new orders, he phones in the Jedi finding to someone that he's never heard of before, and calls Darth Vader. Because at this point, Vader is still a big old secret to most of the Imperials. Well, Vader arrives, and the Captain Dude literally goes, so, how do I address you? Do you have a rank? Do I just call you Darth? And Vader says to call him Lord. Because of course he does. Because Anakin Skywalker, and he will be Lord Vader. Lord, don't call me Darth. And I lost my spot. Where am I? Vader says to come Lord and uses the Force to put Jocasta's new ship roughly back together so he can see what it is. And he says that there's a Jedi on Coruscant and that the soldiers are to look for her everywhere, but not at the old Jedi temple. He leaves to go find her, but there are guards outside the temple, just not inside it. Well, Jocasta makes it to the library, moving above on the second floor balconies. She pauses just long enough to glower at the Grand Inquisitor looking at her books. She sneers at him, but she must stay focused on her mission. In a very far back corner away from everything, she rearranges the books on a particular shelf, and it opens a secret passageway to a hidden room. A guardian protector droid named Cater greets her, saying that nothing has been disturbed since her absence. This room is where most of the secret things are hidden away. There's some, like, outfits of stuff, there's a ship in there, you see some Sith holocrons, but there is one item in a glass case that is incredibly important and comes back again and again in this comic. It's a mask, and it looks kind of like a helmet, but it's a full face mask, and it's blue and it has cracks in it. It is very important later, so remember that there is a mask in this room. Jocasta gets what she was looking for, and why it came to Coruscant in the first place. It's a data disk with a list of every Force-sensitive child in the galaxy at the time of the Purge. She will use this list of children to rebuild the Jedi Order. As she is leaving the library, she looks down from the balcony and sees the Grand Inquisitor literally throwing books over his shoulder, calling them trash and how they're useless. And she loses her temper, and librarian rage comes out of her. She jumps off the balcony, lands on the table, pulls out her lightsaber, and tells him to get his hands off her books. And Grand is like, oh my god, Jocasta, no, I finally get to kill you, you big old bitch. Far too long how you kept me from this knowledge. And Jocasta recognizes him and is stunned, realizing he used to be a Jedi. And he's turned on his brothers and sisters. And Mr. Grand Inquisitor spills some truth tea that he never felt right in the Jedi Temple, that he was taken from a family that he never knew. He was kept from having a life. And that the Jedi were too corrupt and up on their high horses to actually be good. And they fight. And it's a pretty cool fight, and she holds herself pretty well. But he eventually overpowers her. And just as he goes to strike her down, Vader blocks his blade, sparing Jocasta's life. And Grand is pissed and starts squabbling with Vader about how Vader's a traitor and how dare Vader stop him from killing Nu, the person he hates most. And while they're all bitching at each other, Jocasta is like, hot children, and throws a bookcase on top of them. She grabs her lightsaber and literally parkours and runs up a pillar, back up to the balcony and runs. Vader pops out of the books and goes after her, and just so you know, the Inquisitor is knocked out for the rest of the fight, so we don't have to worry about him anymore. Vader follows her and says that she will not be harmed, and she calls him a true Sith Lord. She realizes that he was either behind the Jedi Purge or helped with it, and she knows that he wants her knowledge, so she goes to a computer console, puts in a code, and it deletes every single book in the Jedi Temple. Just erases all of that knowledge, and they all go dark. You know how it's like glowing blue? They all go dark, and it hurts her soul because she's like, oh god, I just deleted thousands of years worth of knowledge. Oh god. And Vader follows her into the secret hidden room. And the droid Kator scans his life signs and identifies him as Anakin Skywalker. Well, in a rage, Vader throws his lightsaber at the droid. But Kator, being a defense droid, easily catches it and at it. And Vader then proceeds to beat the droid to death with his bare fists. Well, Jocasta heard Kator and knows that Vader is Anakin. She knows that she won't be able to fight him without a secret weapon. And finally, and another favorite moment of mine in the comic, I was screaming when it happened. She finds a big fucking rifle, uses her lightsaber, puts it in the light rifle so her kyber crystal powers it, and shoots Vader with a huge blast. I say huge, I mean like ridiculous anime blast, Dragon Ball Z shit kind of huge. And she blows Vader through a fucking wall. And I screamed, it was awesome. So they fight, and Jocasta's shooting him with this thing, and he's trying his best to like deflect it, but they're a huge fucking blast. And Jocasta laments because she understands everything now that she knows that he's Anakin. And she knew that Anakin, the Chosen One, was Palpatine's target. And she's figured out that Palpatine is Sidious and that he warped Anakin like a tool. And she calls him like, you poor, poor, silly tool, something like that. And finally, when she goes to take another shot, the rifle has completely burned up her lightsaber, making it useless. And it's overheating, and she throws the gun at him, and it explodes out the side of the wall. And she uses the Force to grab an ancient lightsaber from the wall and jumps towards the clone troopers guarding below, because she'd rather take her chances with clone troopers over Darth Vader. But finally they disarm her, and she's at the edge of a building. And she decides that she will die with her knowledge, and she falls from the building. But Vader stops her with the Force and pulls her back up and takes her into custody. While they're riding on a ship with the clones, and Vader checks the holochip that Jocasta risked everything for, and he sees it's a list of children that are Force sensitive, and judging by their birth dates, they've all been recently born. But he doesn't know why that Palpatine would want this list. And Jocasta laughs at him and calls him a silly tool, and she says that Palpatine wants to make more Vaders. He wants so many more Vaders, and all of these Vaders just to give the Dark Lord competition in case he can't cut it. And when the clone offer to stun the Jedi, she looks at them and goes, "You guys are stupid. This is a Jedi. This is Anakin Skywalker." And Vader throws the clones off the ships and says that their death is on her. And when Jocasta asks what will happen to her, he crashes the ship and kills Jocasta Nu. Well, reporting back to Papa Palpatine, he says that Jocasta is dead and that she didn't tell him anything, hiding from his master that he knew about the list of kids. And finally, this story arc ends with Jocasta's aide, Gar, watching over her hidden little school and library for years. Finally, time passes, and Gar is too old to care for it anymore. He sets off explosives in the entrance to block the cave, and he kills himself in the process. And even more years passed, and finally, the cave is open again, revealing Luke Skywalker finding all of her knowledge that Jocasta Nu left for him. End of part one.
Hey, Last Jedi, Link.
I waited for like every issue for this to come out, and I was just like, Jocasta Nu, of all people, the librarian.
The librarians are always the best ones.
Look at the mummy! Because Evie in the movie The Mummy, she's a fucking awesome librarian! Like, librarians are awesome!
Yeah, they're guardians of all knowledge.
But, you know, I was thinking about it, too, because something I've debated with Megan for a very long time is how, like, so few people actually, by the time the original trilogy, like, episode 4 happens, it seems like everybody just kind of forgot that the Jedi are alive. But we know people like Yularen, like, fought with the Jedi, and Tarkin even calls it a magic. And I do know there's, like, a shit ton of Imperial propaganda, and that the Empire went to great lengths to, like, destroy everything that was the Jedi. But, like, there's just a moment where Jocasta deletes everything in the library, and all that knowledge is now lost. It's like the burning of the Library of Alexandria.
Yeah, it's like Kirk blowing up the Enterprise.
Yeah, only it's like a fleet of Enterprises. It's like thousands of years worth of Enterprises, which is why I equate to the burning of the Library of Alexandria. And so then when you get to like the new trilogy, that's just gone. Like, Luke has none of that. Rey has none of that. Like, that's such a heavy blow that she did. And it's impactful because we see that in the future that people don't quite know how to be Jedi. But I think that's also good in a way, because I think some of the best Jedi are people like Kanan and Luke and Rey, who have to kind of just find their own way and figure it out. And I think that's actually the best, because it's Jedi bullshit that made
the Jedi fall.
Those
are all the ones that turn out to be the best ones, yep.
Yeah, because it's Jedi bullshit that ended up making them fall in the first place. So it might have actually been a good thing that Jocasta Nu deleted everything. I just like the Grand Inquisitor, too. He's such a little bitch through all this. He's like, I just want to read books.
Yeah, but even then he abuses the books. And it's funny that like, she was home free and she lost her cool because somebody was abusing books.
He calls one drivel and literally throws it over his shoulder. His feet are up on the table, and he's just like, trash.
If she was real cool, she would have just tapped him on the shoulder, and when he turned around, she would have said, shh, and then kicked his ass.
Yeah, like stabbed him in the head.
Yep. Quiet. Quiet, yeah. Please.
Okay, so one point I thought was really interesting, though, and I talked about it when I got here. So there's a moment, like, right at the beginning of the first issue of this arc, where the Grand Inquisitor was talking with Vader about the Inquisitors and stuff like that and training them. And Vader says, well, we'll have to let the Force guide us. Which, as I was saying, that was a very interesting line to me, because that's something we always hear from the Jedi, like, oh, the Force will be our guide, we're one with the Force is with us, blah, blah, blah. But I found that really interesting that that came from a Sith Lord.
Yeah, it's the Force, it's still the Force, it's the dark side of the Force, but it's the Force.
Yeah.
And not, I they are definitely not anti-Force.
I know, and I guess it was more of a point that I just never really thought about before, of like, of course they're using the Force. It's the same. It's the same coin, just a different side of the coin. And I just thought that was a really cool moment, because yep. We don't always see like Palpatine meditating like Yoda did and stuff. And it was just a really interesting moment to me of going, oh yeah, the Force would guide them. Yeah. So I had another point too. Oh, so about Palpatine. I think it's really cool of Vader. And by cool, I mean, well, he's evil, so whatever. So take cool lightly. That he destroyed the list of kids that would either make new Inquisitors or new Vaders. And then I started thinking about how we've seen this before.
Well, yeah, this is the only way you can put, like, some real tension in these Vader stories is having him know that having him work for Palpatine, but still looking out for himself at the same time, you know?
But I also think when I read that moment, it made me actually think back way to, like, Clone Wars episode where Anakin and Ahsoka are trying to save the babies from Cad Bane, because he's seen this before, of, like, evil trying to take these babies. And it makes me wonder if there's a moment where he goes, I remember that. Oh, that's what he's doing.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but I can understand, like, on one hand, like, this is him, you know, trying not to make more competition for himself. But doesn't that also kind of leave a blow to the Sith? Because these could now all be kids who could be raised as potential Jedi, too. I'm asking this question a little bit later on. This comes up again, because, and I'll talk about it more later, but the Inquisitors start Project Harvester, where they purposely go out and find Force-sensitive kids. Well, at the time, Vader didn't know that they were going to be doing that, so he destroyed this list. That list would have been super helpful. So it makes me kind of double question back to this moment where he goes, well, I'm hunting kids now, but it would have been easier if I kept that. So I think he's all out for number one, trying to cover his own ass.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And I would worry less about the kids being made into Jedi, because there's really not that many Jedi lurking around. And if there are, he's going to try and kill them anyway, so.
And if they are, I mean, they're all probably going to probably be a lot like Rey and not realize that they're Jedi.
Right, they're just going to be hanging out somewhere, and every once in a while,
be like, wow, I'm good at jumping. I'm good at jumping and dodging things, cool. And then they'll all go off to be pod racers.
Yeah, it'd probably be more like they're just really lucky, you know, because they never had anybody to refine it, but, or, you know, whatever, but.
Actually, they probably have so many, that's why Ezra is so good in the beginning, because he doesn't realize he has the Force, and he's just really good at sensing stuff, and he doesn't know why. And so he just seems like he's lucky.
Yeah, you would have no way of telling.
Oh, Jocasta Nu is such a badass in this. I really enjoyed this sequence because
I'm just glad she died so she didn't end up in a tank being tortured by Palpatine for the next 30 years or whatever.
I know.
That's what would have basically happened.
That would have happened. I mean, so I'm glad she died too, as much as like, but what I actually really loved about this volume is I have just such a new appreciation for her. Because she's like Evie in The Mummy, but as a Jedi, I mean, she's just a badass. And I'm glad that we actually got to see her fight. And that she could, at some point, was a young woman and probably was a fighter as well, just like the rest of them. And it was just a really cool series of comics, just watching her fight. But that's all I have for part one of volume two.
I'm ready for part two.
All right. Let me get a sip of my water. Because cream soda is still a continually bad idea for this. All right, part two, which isn't as long, but it's a completely different story, so which is why I split them into two parts. So part two this story is a bit more straightforward, but here we go. So some time passes in the comic, and Vader's just doing his thing, and he's training Inquisitors, and he's hunting Jedi, and just being a badass. But other high-ranking Imperials in the hierarchy are starting to resent him, because he's just this guy who showed up out of nowhere, and he has the Emperor's favor, and he also just constantly force chokes officers without consequences. It actually happens quite a few times, and that Palpatine's like, Vader, I can't rule over the dead.
Yeah, he's like the new general manager, just graduated with a business degree that comes into McDonald's and like starts bossing everybody around.
Yeah, pretty much. That's actually a very good analogy.
Who the hell is this guy?
I need to finish them, but Megan showed me a video where it's dubbed over lines from the Star Wars movies, and Palpatine is just like the CEO of a company, and like Darth Maul is like the visiting regional manager trying to like run his business, and that the Empire is actually a really good, nice corporation just trying to run business, and all the Jedi are just drugged out hippies that are just getting in the way. And it was hilarious. That's what you just reminded me of, because that's pretty much the plot of that video. Vader is getting a lot of the higher ups angry. Anyway, Vader gets a tip that a Jedi might be hiding out on some bar on some planet. And he brings along the Inquisitor, the Ninth Sister. She's one of the new ones, and she's just this huge woman. She's just this big, muscular woman. She's taller than Vader. And Vader's tall. She's taller and bigger than Vader. And she also has empathic powers. And he brings her along to help him. And he seems calm, but she notes that he's very eager to fight another Jedi. Mostly because things are starting to slow down for the Inquisitors, and Vader's starting to get bored, to be honest. And they get to the bar, and Vader tells her that he's going to go in alone, which is perfectly fine for the Ninth Sister, because she's actually kind of lazy, and I like her, and she's really sassy, and she is in no hurry to be killed. Inside the bar, Vader is attacked by a family of bounty hunters, a mom, a dad, and a daughter, and they are being paid to kill Vader, and it's a trap. And they use ion weapons to neutralize all the weapons in the bar, including his lightsaber. They use a magnet to pull his lightsaber out of his hand, but Vader stops it with the Force, and with the back and forth between the Force and the magnet, the lightsaber breaks in half, and it just leaves the kyber crystal. And a fight breaks out with all the patrons in the bar, and now with no weapons, Vader calls the Ninth Sister for backup. But the wonderful, lazy Inquisitor she is, she literally goes, oh no, I have ion weapons, and they knocked out my comm system. I guess I didn't get the message. Oops. And she spits and leaves him there by himself. Well, the family bounty hunter escapes, and Vader picks up his kyber crystal and walks outside, and he's pissed that someone has laid a trap on his life. And he takes the Ninth Sister's lightsaber and demands to know if the other Inquisitors put this bounty on his head. And she says that she's not the smartest person in the world, but she's also not stupid either. And the Inquisitors know not to cross Vader. Well, Vader takes her weapon and goes after the bounty hunting family. And after a nice highway chase scene, he catches up with them and he takes their daughter with the Force and he threatens to kill her if they don't tell him who hired them. Well, they also bargain back of like, well, if you kill her, we have nothing to live for, so if you don't kill her, we won't tell you. And they say that they took this anonymous job for the money, and they gave him the information of where they can find the data. And Vader drops their daughter and leaves. On the flight back to Coruscant with the Ninth Sister, Vader finishes reconstructing his new lightsaber, and it's the lightsaber that he has in the movie. He's also been researching who could have put this bounty on him. And the order came from the Emperor's office. And there's a very, very short list of people who could have access to this, including the Emperor himself, who he starts wondering, is Palpatine trying to kill me? And there's also some random dude that Vader choked at the beginning of the story. But their ship comes under attack as they arrive on Coruscant, and it's another kill hit placed on Vader. He takes over the ship and uses his skilled pilot skills to maneuver the ship back to ground and keep them from dying. Vader goes to Papa Palpatine, who is looking through artifacts hidden by Jocasta Nu. He is particularly fascinated with that blue mask that I mentioned in the last part, because the mask is important later. Vader confronts Papa Palpatine about putting a bounty on him, and Palp is all like, "Bro, if I really wanted you dead, I wouldn't use fucking bounty hunters. I would just do it myself. Go meditate on this ship and leave me with my new mask toy. I love you, mask." I added that. Vader meditates and thinks about all that's been happening since this death nonsense has happened. He realizes it's probably the dude that he force choked, and probably other high-ranking Imperial officers too. They're resentful that he just popped out of the snow like daisies and has all this power and no consequences. The secret that Vader is around is actually hurting him, because all these high-ranked guys don't know who he is, they don't know where he comes from, and they don't realize that his extension of power is part of the Emperor's power. He takes this realization to Papa Palps, and he wants to make an example of the quote, he wants to make an example of them and quote unquote get to know all the officers. And Palpatine agrees that this is a good idea, but he says, "Don't touch Farkin. I like that Farkin guy. He says I'm pretty, and I need to keep him around for the Death Star." Gathering all the high-ranking officers in one place, Palpatine formally introduces Vader to them all, and Palps makes it clear that any order from Vader is an order from the Emperor himself, and they need to tell all their men under them as well. Vader comes forward and calls to the front five people picked at random, including the one guy he force-choked earlier, because he knows that bro was behind trying to kill him. He says that he will continue to survive any attempts made on his life, unlike these five people. And then he uses the force to choke them to death to make an example of it. The arc ends with Vader meditating with his new lightsaber. In this dark, mental, twisted world, Vader himself looks like some kind of Hayao Miyazaki monster, and as butterflies made of light try to reach him, he uses his dark mental tendrils and breaks all the light side butterflies apart. End of part two.
I like it.
I have to wonder, like, why, like, on one hand, I get why Palpatine wanted Vader to be this big secret, because it's kind of like the boogeyman, you know, like, there's a dark thing, like, looming, and he would just show up and kill everything. But I do like that they address the politics of it. Like, normal people don't understand what Sith are, and at the end of the day, Palpatine's, like you said, pretty much running a business. Like, he has
right,
to...
Right, and he's a guy in a goofy suit who's wheezing, you know, so...
And, like, the normal people don't know what Sith Lords are, so they don't understand. They just think that this guy is just, like, a soldier dude that just showed up. So
yep.
I like...
Well, they understand now.
Yeah. So I like that they actually took the time to address the politics around Vader, because it's... They did a similar scene in the Extended Universe. This is one of the things I was kind of looking into leading up to this video. And in the Extended Universe, it kind of happens the same way, only the only difference was some of the Imperial officers were like, "Well, we left the Jedi. Like, I served with the Jedi. I'm not going to forget that Jedi were a thing." And Vader's like, "You're going to forget that Jedi were a thing," and kills the guy. Like, that was really the only difference. But I do like that they took the time to, like, address this.
Why not? I mean, you got to fill comic books. You might as well, I guess, tell the whole story.
Yeah. Oh, so the visual of Vader meditating is so cool, because it's like this, like, dark nightmare world.
Impressionistic, sorta.
Yeah, and he himself... have you ever seen Princess Mononoke?
Yes.
You know at the very beginning, the boar that's just covered in, like, the black, squishy worms?
Yes.
His entire body is covered in, like, twisted black worm-looking things, except for his cybernetic limbs, which are white, because they're not part of him. And... it's so cool because all these like light butterflies keep trying to reach at him, and he's just swatting them away with like these tendrils that are coming out of his
maybe
back.
Maybe it's good midichlorians versus bad midichlorians.
Yeah. But it's, I think that's actually some of my favorite, like the first time I ever saw like Vader's mental world, I just stared at it for like 5 minutes looking at every little thing, and it just, it so much reminded me of a Miyazaki monster. It was just so cool. So that's all I have for volume 2.
Oh, okay. I'm ready for volume 3. I'm actually really looking forward to getting these comics. I'm hoping by the time, like, I'll have forgotten a lot of this by the time I read the old Darth Vader comics and then get to these. But yeah, these sound really good. I was really enjoying the first Darth Vader series, too, but I think I only got up to, like, 12 or 13 of that.
And, like, I'm just going over basic plot. There's, like, a bunch of, like, kind of minor things that I'm not covering, just in case, like, people want to read them and stuff. Like, and there's the art. I can't even praise the artwork enough. The artwork is gorgeous. Just like the looks that people have on their faces. And our friend Giuseppe, that I now know how to say to you, like, I mean, it's stellar. Like, every single thing is just gorgeous. And I can't praise it enough.
We here at Demanza Corp are always looking out for our Italian brethren. And so, big ups to Giuseppe.
All right, volume 3. Burning Seas.
Ooh.
Oh, we're about to go into some old Clone Wars callbacks. Yeah. So, and some Rogue callbacks, too. Or I guess they're not callbacks. I guess they're pre-callbacks. Cat. A year has passed, and Palpatine is happy that his 1-year anniversary of being the Emperor is going just so well. But they need to strengthen their hold and show their power. He tells Vader that Mon Cala has been refusing the ways of the Empire, and that their little fish king, who we met in the Clone Wars, has even spread a couple rumors of possibly succeeding from the Empire. That's right! Prince Lee Char, who we lovingly call Charlie on the show, is back from the Mon Cala arc of Season 4. He is still the king of his people, and is still a little cute fishy cutie, and he's back from the Clone Wars. Only now, he has more of a spine, and he's pushing back on the Empire. So hooray to our little guppy Charlie. It's Charlie, Chris! Do you remember him? You're like, wow, he's a little teenager.
Yeah, I'm surprised, I guess it's been a year, but it was still to the point where he probably thought that those guys were on his side, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were fighting with the clones a year ago, side by side.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been like a few years. I mean, Charlie's back. Yay, Charlie. Well, Palpatine also says that there's rumors that Charlie is getting outside help and that it could be a Jedi. He tells Vader to get a team together and go check it out. On Mon Cala, King Charlie is meeting with an Imperial ambassador who is trying to negotiate trade agreements. And just so you know, Tarkin is lurking around too, aka Farkin. But he's up on a Star Destroyer above the planet, so he's not actually down there, but he's lurking around. And the ambassador insists that the Empire is there to protect the people on Mon Cala. And Charlie is firm, going, whatever, bro, you're going to take all of our resources, and you're going to leave us starving and poor. Look, we have no beef with the Empire. We don't want to fight the Empire. But we're also not going to roll over and let you take all of our shit. So the answer is no. Also, Admiral Raddus from Rogue One is there, and he's backing up Charlie in this exchange. Well, the ambassador is leaving with no deal, and Vader arrives on a floating city with 3 of his Inquisitors. The 9th sister, who was lazy and left him to die in a bar. The 6th brother, who we know is after Vader. And the 10th brother, who is still kind of a new character. If you want to know more about the 10th brother, there was a very boring Mace Windu comic I never finished. And the 10th brother is a Jedi in that. And he's this blind dude. And he was just all like, why are we fighting in this Clone War, Mace? And Mace is like, because we have to. And this Jedi is like, this is not the Jedi way. I don't like this. So I'm just going to try and kill all of you. Yay! and they capture him and they imprison him, and now he's an Inquisitor. So if you want to know more about how he became more evil, there's a Mace Windu comic which was boring, but this made it very interesting, because you're like, oh, that's who that guy is. Cool. Well, on the docks of the floating city, they meet Admiral Akbar and his guards, and they won't let them pass. And Vader says that there's an enemy of the Empire here. And Akbar is like, it's a trap! Not really, I'm kidding. I just couldn't pass up, it's a trap. I just had to do it. And Akbar is like, look, there's no one here, so just go on your way then. Well, the ambassador comes outside, and he's like, good luck, Vader. These people are fishy.
Whoa.
I know, because no one's ever made that joke before.
Fishy. Oh, Jesus. Oh, you're killing me.
I'm here all week.
Tip your waitress.
And the ambassador gets on his shuttle, and it takes off. While Vader continues to push Akbar, who continues to say that there's no traitor on Mon Cala, they hear boom, and they look up, and the ambassador's ship explodes, killing the dude. Well, Farkin gets the message that his ambassador dude is dead and goes, oh, look at that! I guess we should take over the planet now! Hey, Vader, babe, I'm here too! I'm gonna lay siege to the planet! Now you go get the king! Okay, thank you.
How come Vader's all, or Farkin's all of a sudden like, hello?
Well, go read from a certain point of view and you'll find out why.
Ooh, anyway. From a certain yeah, point of view.
I like farm boys. Well, King Charlie, Farkin is now going, hey, let's attack the planet. Well, King Charlie sends Radis and Akbar away to prepare for a fight, and they jump into the water. And one of them takes the northern hemisphere to protect, and the other one takes the southern hemisphere. And Charlie pleads with Farkin to stop the fighting. But Farkin is like, no, you killed our ambassador, dude, first. Let's fight. Well, Vader and his Inquisitors fight through Akbar's guards until they get to Charlie's throne room. And the Ninth Sister starts torturing Charlie about where the Jedi is. But he says that he has no idea what they're talking about. And then they hear something big coming. And it's part of Charlie's plan. A huge tidal wave sweeps over the city and crashes into the throne room. And Charlie escapes into the safe water while Vader and his Inquisitors get washed away into the ocean. And Vader sinks to the bottom of the ocean. And his suit is barely keeping him alive from the pressure... from the pressure of the water, and his air supply is quickly running out. He uses the Force to make an air bubble around his head, and he rides on the body of a dead squid. He kills the giant squid and uses the Force to ride on its body until he finds the Inquisitors in their own submarine. I swear I'm not making this up.
He's Pickle Rickin' it left and right.
The Inquisitors have lost King Charlie, but they think they found the location of the possible Jedi. Meanwhile, Charlie's body is rescued by his men, and they stick him on life support. He knows that he needs to warn his secret friend, and he calls the Jedi Farron Barr. Farron Barr is a brand new character, so let's give him some backstory. So this is revealed over the course of the arc, but I'm just going to put most of it in one place, except for the big reveal. Farron Barr lied to Charlie, saying that he was a Jedi Knight, when... in all actuality, he was a Padawan when Order 66 happened. He was fascinated with how fast the Jedi, the Sith took over, that he hacked into the Jedi temple and saw on the security cameras that Anakin marched into the temple with a 501st. Barr also had a vision of that Mon Cala would help save the galaxy. He then goes out and finds a bunch of Joe Schmo's people who are just nobody's in the galaxy. It convinces them to be his acolytes, to follow in his cause to save the universe. And he goes to Mon Cala and he tells Charlie of his vision. And he starts guiding the little fishy people ever since. And he also shares with his acolytes that Vader is Anakin. There's also a hint that he might have mind-tricked Charlie into following him, but that's not confirmed. There's just an image of him talking to Charlie and holding up two fingers, so... it's kind of hinted that he might have mind-tricked Charlie. Knowing that Vader is coming for them, Barr gathers his acolytes to fight. It is also revealed that he was the one who blew up the ambassador's ships, because he needed this fight on Mon Cala to happen, because he's a shady, shady Jedi. One by one, as his Joe Schmo acolytes fall to Vader and his Inquisitors, it's also revealed each of their backstories. These acolytes were just normal, desperate people who hated the Empire that Barr found, and he used their desperateness to aid him. Also, he used the Jedi mind trick to force them into his service and make them follow him, because Farr is kind of a dick with that mind trick. Barr is finally cornered by Inquisitors and their troopers, but Barr realizes the troopers are special. They were from the last batch of clones from Kamino who never had their inhibitor used. He tells the troopers that the Inquisitors are Jedi, and he personally executes Order 66 on the Inquisitors. The clones turn on the Inquisitors and shoot at them as Barr flees. The 10th brother is immediately killed, but the 6th brother cuts off the 9th sister's leg and runs, leaving her behind to die. The last we see of the clones is a single trooper sitting among the bodies of his fallen brothers, mourning them. Barr only has one acolyte left, and her name is Verla, and she's also attuned to the Force. He tells her to leave to find the other survivors of the Purge, like Yoda, Obi-Wan, and Quinlan Voss. She escapes with the help of some Mon Cala people. The only reason I bring that up is because we don't see her again after that, but just in case she might pop up somewhere else, we haven't seen her since. Barr is finally ready to face Vader. By all this time, Tarkin has been bombarding the planet and is decimating the underwater cities and just killing so many people on Mon Cala. Vader has also found Charlie, who wants the fighting to stop. Vader and Barr face off, but King Charlie demands answers from Barr, who promised that the planet would be spared. Mon Cala was supposed to lead the rebellion. But Barr says that he never said the planet would survive. He reveals that he tricked Charlie and that Mon Cala would be an example of Imperial destruction and it would lead other worlds to rebel. Horrified, Charlie calls Ackbar and Raddus and tells them what happened. With Mon Cala's people dying, the two admirals make a desperate choice. They get as many ships as they can find and run at Tarkin's blockade. Both admirals escape, hating to leave their king behind, but they know they must get out with as many people as they can so Mon Cala can survive. And this is how they leave and join the bigger rebellion as we see them in the original trilogy and in Rogue One. Vader defeats Barr, who is happy to die knowing that he will stop the Empire is what I meant to write, but I wrote save the Empire. Save the Empire. Charlie, still on life support, has no choice but to surrender what's left of his planet. They take Charlie into custody, and that's where he will stay until Luke, Leia, and Han find him in the time period between Episode 4 and Episode 5. Now, this volume actually ends with another story. It's a one-shot. It's nothing crazy big, but it is a really cool little one-shot story that I really enjoyed reading, and it features Vader and Tarkin. Basically, Vader is just so good at hunting Jedi that there's really nothing for him to do anymore, and Vader is bored, and he wants to test his skills. And he asks Farkin, who's a renowned hunter, to basically hunt him. So it's a whole story of Vader and Tarkin hunting each other, and it's a big game of cat and mouse, and it's a really fun read. That's Volume 3.
Hunt him, huh? Farkin's out hunting farm boy, huh?
Yep.
He's good at that.
So this is a really, really, really interesting arc. Because Farron Barr is a very morally gray character. He's doing something that he believes that will stop the Empire and help save people. But one, he forces people to follow him, desperate people, by using the mind trick on them. And he flat out lies to Charlie, saying, and he actually tells them, like, a billion lives will die here, but it will save a trillion lives across the galaxy.
Yeah, his plan is pretty dumb for a Jedi, basically.
But he was a Padawan, too.
Or that's even a Padawan.
Yeah, he actually kind of reminds me of the Mon Cala dude that Kit Fisto had that was like, I can be a Jedi, watch me, Grievous. But he's incredibly sinister.
I'd like to read the whole thing, but he seemed kind of like a little bit of a, a character just in service of the plot, you know, sort of thing. He served a purpose to drive the plot forward.
I take it kind of also very much of a Desperate Times kind of thing, like, the Jedi gone, I have to take desperate measures to stop the Empire.
Right, and you're gonna have to lose a few pawns to win the chess game and stuff like that, but the thing is, if you're trying to like get the Mon Cala involved, it might not be a good idea to plan their downfall, you know?
Yeah, because very much this was a story about, because, you know, you watch the original trilogy, there's not a lot of aliens around except for, like, Ackbar and Radis.
Yeah, it's just a plan that's made to backfire on him in the opposite way of what he would want.
And, like, so this was very much a story about, like, how Mon Cala became so prominent in the rebellion. That's the other half of the story of why it's so big and important. The kind of, like, sad thing about all this is when this arc was running, the main Star Wars comic was running a similar arc on Mon Cala as well. And so they were running side by side. So it's interesting that here is your Charlie and all this struggle. And at the same time, the main Star Wars story was showing like what happened 20 years later.
Right.
On Mon Cala and what was left of it. And the sad thing is that Charlie is still imprisoned and they pretty much keep him on life support. They don't try to fix him. So Han, Luke, and Leia find Charlie, and like the planet's been under Imperial rule ever since this. Like no one leaves or comes back, and everyone is meek and timid. And Charlie, on like they find him and they wake him up, and he's dying. And he gives a final call of like a call to action, and he calls his people to fight back, and they save Mon Cala, and he dies. And I'm like, oh, Charlie!
Sorry, Charlie.
Charlie, no. You tiny little guppy man. You never had a chance.
As you flush him down the toilet.
Oh, no.
Oh.
And just something to add to the Jedi Bar's stupidness. As he's fighting Vader, he's all like, I know you're Anakin Skywalker. And Vader's like, I'm really going to kill you now.
Now you're definitely going to die. Yeah.
For realties. But yeah, this was, I like every arc in the series, but each one for different reasons. But there was a long time where like this was probably my favorite arc until volume 4, and I'm really enjoying volume 4 because it's fucking bonkers crazy. But like for the longest time, like just what they were doing with Barr, who was just such a morally gray character, and because the Jedi's supposed to be a good guy. He's almost like a Krell. But, like, if Krell was... No, he's very much like a Krell.
He ends up sort of, like, in action being a Krell. His motivations aren't the same as Krell, but he still ends up being a dick.
Yeah.
Like, murdering dick.
Yeah, because, like, he's like, pawns are gonna die. Mind trick. Okay! It's also fun watching the Inquisitors do this too, and watching them backstab each other, because the clones, oh my god, when I realized they were clones and he executes Order 66, it was a huge like oh shit moment, and the Inquisitors were like oh shit.
Yeah, really.
Because they escaped that shit. And there's just a great moment where the brother cuts off the sister's leg and just leaves her to die. Like, bye, bitch! The Inquisitors are all snarky bitches, and I love them. They're all bitches.
Yeah, they're on the... It was just like we were talking about in the Thrawn episode. Like, the people... If you're working on the dark side, you're not, like, working with ethical people to begin with. Nobody's got much moral fiber, you know?
Though, I kind of like, because this is a year after the last arc, and the last arc opened with Vader looking at the Grand Inquisitor and going, they're ex-Jedi, they fight like Jedi, and they move like Jedi. So that was probably something that, like, he taught them, was like, you're in it for number one, kill kill each other.
Yeah.
But that's all I have for Volume 3. Do you have anything else?
No, I'm good.
All right. Volume 4, the current arc that I'm reading, that I can't wait for the next issue to come out. Ugh. All right.
So it's two different stories with Fortress in the title?
So the comic's been running with the title Fortress Vader. But the volume of the collection of all of them is called The Black Fortress.
Oh, okay.
But I actually like Fortress Vader better, so I included both.
Excellent. I like both of them, too.
I know. So, I'm also, because it's two kind of separate stories, I also broke this into two parts as well. Okay?
All right.
Part one. So some more time passes. The volume opens with ex-Jedi Yeath Koth. At some point between the end of the Clone Wars series and before Episode 3, Yeath Koth had been removed from the Jedi Council. We don't know the reason why he was removed at the moment, they never told us. Ever since he's been living in hiding, and ever since the Purge, and he's been working as a priest in the Church of Ganthic Enlightenment, which Palpatine finds so funny later, because he's like, of course he became a priest. These dumbass Jedi. And Yeath Koth has a wife named Mira, and the comic opens with the birth of his daughter. But just as they're holding their baby girl for the very first time, Vader kicks in the door and goes, hey, I brought you a baby present. It's your death. And Koth pleads with him, saying that he's given up the Jedi ways. But Vader goes, you know, once a Jedi, always gonna kill you anyway. And as they fight, Mira takes their daughter and runs. Well, there are three Inquisitors that chase her. One is the fifth brother, the male guy one that we see in Rebels. But there are two new unidentified Inquisitors. They never give them our names. We don't know what number they are. And one of them is a black Twi'lek, who looks awesome, by the way, because he's a black Twi'lek. And he's scary as hell looking. And he's a man. And the other one is an unknown species. We don't know her species, but she's completely red, and she's a woman. And the Lady Inquisitor finds Mira right before she reaches her ship. And Mira pleads with the Inquisitor, woman to woman, to let her go with her child. And the Inquisitor lets her pass, and Mira gets on the ship. But as it's taken off, the baby is suddenly ripped from her arms, and the Inquisitor brings the child to her with the Force. But the fifth brother witnessed the entire thing, and questions why she let Mira go. And the Lady Inquisitor says that Mira would never trust another woman again, let alone another person. But the fifth brother wonders if she let her go because the Lady Inquisitor got caught in the act of letting Mira go. Well, Yeath Koth and Vader are fighting it out, and then they hear a baby crying. And Koth turns around and sees that his daughter is in the Inquisitor's hands. And Vader stabs him in the back and kills Yeath Koth. And they take the baby back to Coruscant and gives her to some creepy nursemaids. They're really creepy. Like, they're all in red, and they're huge. I guess they're people. I don't know if they might be droids. But they're dressed in red dresses, and they're
sort of like the Emperor's guards, sort of.
Yeah, they have these red dresses, but they have these like white cylinder masks with just black eyes, like no like facial features. They're really creepy.
Oh, that's how you raise some happy babies.
I know. And they give the baby to the nursemaids, and Mr. Grand Inquisitor greets Vader, saying that Project Harvester is going well. We've seen a bit of Project and Rebels, because we know that the Inquisitors are looking for babies for Palpatine, just like Palpatine got Cad Bane to kidnap babies in the Clone Wars. And this is to teach Force-sensitive kids like Yeath Koth's baby the ways of the dark side, while also keeping them from growing into Jedi. Well, Mr. Grand congratulates Vader on another victory, but Vader doesn't care, and he just wants to get back to work and find the next target. But since they don't have any leads on where any of the missing Jedi are at the moment, Vader is forced to wait, has nothing to do. Well, the fifth brother is all sneaky, because all the Inquisitors are little snitches and bitches, and he tells Vader about the Lady Inquisitor letting Mira go. And Vader realizes that something is up with his Inquisitorius. Celebrating their victory, the Black Twi'lek Inquisitor and the Lady one are drinking together. And they wonder what Vader will do once all the Jedi are dead. And they figure that he'll find something to keep him busy. And right on cue, Vader comes in and pulls his lightsaber out on them. And Mr. Grand is like, Vader, is this a test? And Vader's like, nope! And he attacks the two Inquisitors. And the Twi'lek blocks him with his own saber and tells the woman to run. He follows, and Vader gives chase. And it turns out that these two had feelings for each other, and Vader sees their attachment as weakness. The chase takes them all through court, jumping on cars and crashing cars into buildings. And one car even lands on an alien couple having a picnic, and it kills them. And they leave a path of destruction until Vader finally corners the two. They draw their lightsabers to fight, but Vader controls them with the Force and makes them stab each other. Later, Vader explains what happened, and Papa Palpatine is pissed off. Turns out, the picnic alien couple that was killed by the car was prominent senators. And Vader literally doesn't give a fuck that they're senators. But Palpatine says that he can't rule an empire of the dead. So maybe Vader should take the Inquisitors somewhere other than Coruscant. And he offers up a list of planets, including Naboo, since the place always had a very sentimental importance to Vader in his past. But Vader only wants one planet to call his own, Mustafar. Palpatine also rewards Vader for all his victories by giving him two gifts. One is Padme's old ship. All shiny, sitting in a hangar, and Vader's just looking at it like, oh, Padme's ship. Because Palpatine's a dick. And the other...
He's going in there, and he's like, it still smells like her. Ugh.
I know.
Oh, God.
I know.
Look, it's her, their hair's up. Maybe I can clone her from her hair.
But, girl, I had sex with every surface of this ship. I lost my virginity in this ship.
They come out and Vader's sniffing her out like, get out, get out. God, leave me alone.
And he's like touching the ship, but it's like a metal torso, so it's just like crunk, crunk, crunk. Anyway. Thanks for that. Okay. The gift one is Padme's ship. Palpatine's a dick. The second present is the helmet that I've been mentioning since the Jocasta New arc. Palpatine explains that it belonged to an ancient Sith Lord named Momin. Vader has never heard of Momin, and even Palpatine didn't know who he was until he got the helmet. Momin was such a ruthless heretic and so different from other Sith that even Sith Lords feared him and buried away all knowledge of him. And Vader asks how Palp knows all of this. And Palp said the helmet told him. With that, Vader sets off to Mustafar. End of part one.
Helmet told me. As soon as I heard his name, I just kept hearing, Momin, Momin, Momin. Vader's helmet, Momin.
Thanks, Chris. You're going to ruin the comic for me.
Across the galaxy, they're Roman. Aha! Anyway. Well, these are not... Well, at least they're keeping the Darth Vader comics dark, man. People are just getting killed. Like there's like kind of slapstick, but it's people are dead.
Actually, Charles Soule was like, if there's ever a point in this that you're rooting for Vader, it's about that time is when I kill somebody. To remind you that he's not someone to root for.
Yeah, he's the main character, but not a good guy.
Yeah. So,
this is basically Breaking Bad for Darth Vader.
I've never seen Breaking Bad, but I get the reference. But I kind of like this whole section with the two Inquisitors that... If I actually remember correctly, like, he had feelings for her, and she didn't like him like that, but they were close, like, they were friends. And I kind of found that interesting, because, like, such a big thing that the Jedi banned was relationships. Like, they couldn't have attachments. Oh. But the Siths were all like, yeah, attachments, but Vader's like, no, that's a weakness.
Well, if anybody knows. But at the same time, I think Vader's just looking... Vader's also, like, that manager at work who's, like, just looking to pick a fight with somebody, you know, just looking for a reason. He breaks into the break room and he's like, you guys are fraternizing, on guard, you know?
Yeah, I can't even begin to tell you how cool this Black Twi'lek looks. I've never seen a Black Twi'lek before. He looks scary. Like, he has, like, dark eyes, and all you can see on his face is his teeth. He is so creepy looking, and I love him. I just wanted to say that because he's so cool. But I also just like the dick move that Palpatine pulls by not only offering Naboo as a planet, like, because he's like, oh, it's my home planet. You know, it's a nature of goodwill to my friend. You can have my planet, Naboo. But he knows it's like Padme's planet too, and then he gives him Padme's ship because Palpatine's a dick.
Yeah, here, have a few memories. Memories!
Have you heard about the new Cats movie that's coming?
No.
So you know the musical Cats, right?
Yeah.
They're making a movie of it.
I'm very surprised that they haven't already made a movie of it. You know what I mean?
Okay, because here's the thing with the new Cats movie. We're tangenting now. I'm a sucker for Cats. And, like, I am very well aware, I can hear you groaning, that it's a musical about nothing. It has no plot. And it's a musical about cats. But Cats has a very special place in my heart because it was one of my first things of live theater that I ever saw. So it, like, really solidified my love of live theater. So Cats is a very specific, like, special place in my heart. Listen to this fucking cast. And I'm just gonna start kind of from the bottom. Jason Derulo is Rum-Tum Tugger. Jennifer Hudson is Grisabella. Taylor Swift is in it.
Oh, jeez.
James Corden is in it. Rebel Wilson is in it. I listen to three big names, like super big names, that are not Taylor Swift. Dame Judi Dench. Ian McKellen.
Oh, okay, Idris, yeah, sure.
And Idris Elba.
Okay, Idris Elba for sure. I was sort of actually, you know what's funny is I was sort of picturing an Idris Elba type for like Rum-Tum Tugger or whatever, the main cat.
He's playing McCavity. McCavity. And I'm just in there going, on one hand, I'm really excited for this movie. On the other hand, I'm very wary of this movie. And then I saw the cast list and I was like, what the fuck is this movie? Because half of this is pop stars and the other half is like Academy Award winners. I don't know what this
That might
movie
be a
is.
Good idea. That might not be bad planning. To bring in two different kinds of audiences. You don't want to put all pop, you know, pop singers can hold their own, and the Academy Award winners probably are trained singers, or, you know, it's not their main gig, but they'll at least be able to hold their own and do some acting. So.
And then you also have two prominent comedians with James Corden and Rebel Wilson.
Yeah, neither of who I know who either of them are, so.
One's a talk show host, one is, like, has been in a lot of the, you would know her if you saw her. She was in, Bridesmaids, and, she's kind of like a plus-size actress who's really known for that kind of role. You would know her if you saw her. But she's really funny. So I'm very excited / wary for this movie because I absolutely have no idea. I actually texted, when they cast Idris Elba, I texted it to Megan, who has helped me with my cat's love, my love of theater. And Megan just wrote me back, what the fuck is this movie? So.
They could either come up with a story for it or they could just film it. As it is with like, you know, as something more impressionistic. Who knows? We'll see. Who's the director? Do you know? Anybody of any...
Let me pull it back up. IMDb's. No, I want to go back. I know they have a director. No, I didn't go forward. I went back too far. No. I'm going to go forward again. A tribe of cats called the Jellicles must decide yearly which one of them will ascend to the heavy bearing you come back in the new Jellicle life. Director is Tom Hooper.
No idea.
He's known for The Danish Girl. Oh, he did the movie version of Les Miserables. That's where I knew him.
Oh, okay.
And that was actually a very praised for how it was done. You did the King's Speech too.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. In case. So he's doing he was very much praised for Les Miserables, so, which I still haven't seen, but I'm not a big fan of Les Miserables.
My roommate just worked backstage at the broad, you know, the stage version just came through town. She just finished up a couple days ago.
Yeah, Les Miserables.
She had to change somebody so quickly that she had to take a giant pair of scissors and cut them out of their bodice to put them into their next outfit.
Hmm. Yeah, Les Mis is just one of those plays, like, I've never had a good experience seeing it. The first time I ever saw anything from Les Miserables was at a high school competition, and it was only the first act. And Les Miserables is also one of those plays where they say everyone's name one time, except for Jean Valjean and his nemesis. So I didn't know who half the people were for the play. And then the second time I saw it was at the Fox Theater here in Atlanta, and I was in the nosebleed seats. And the Fox Theater, the stage is shaped like a beehive, so really the ideal place to see a play is the bottom and the center. Because if you get too close to the beehive shape, you can't see half the stage. If you get too far away, you can't see the other half the stage. And if you get too high, the beehive shape blocks half the stage. It's a terribly designed stage. We've talked about this much a lot when I was a theater major, how bad the stage the Fox Theater is. But it's a gorgeous place. So I saw Les Miserables the second time at the Fox Theater, but I was in the nosebleed seats, so I couldn't see half of the fucking show. So I've never had a really good experience with Les Miserables, and I've just never really had the urge to look into it more, so whatever.
Eh.
So I wasn't all like, yeah, when the movie came out. I was just like, eh.
Yeah. Hey, me too. Even less so.
Yeah. But I think that's all I have that we tangent about musicals, about part one.
Well, I'm eager to get to part two, because this is the coolest idea for me, is I want to hear about Vader's secret lair, because I want my Vader's secret lair.
Oh, this Burning Seas was probably my favorite arc until this one, because of this next part, which has been nothing but bitchin' awesome.
Yeah, this is what I've been waiting for in this show.
Alright, part two. Vader arrives on Mustafar with an Imperial architect named Alva Brenna and her assistant. Flying Padme's ship and hating every single fucking moment of it, Vader flies into the atmosphere with no shields on. The descent and the pressure almost kills every other Imperial on board and completely burns up the ship, so it's not recognizable anymore. On Mustafar, Brenna starts designing a palace for Vader. But Vader doesn't care, and he doesn't have time for that, and he goes into the dark side cave where he had visited when he corrupted his kyber crystal, because it's a dark side well. Brenna bugs him from time to time with designs, and he shoots them all down, saying that they're not good enough. Much later, Vader very suddenly one day hears a scream. He literally sighs in annoyance, gets up from his meditation, and goes to check it out. He finds Brenna dead outside the ship. Going inside, he sees her assistant. He's wearing the Mask of Momen, having killed his boss, and he has designed a new design for Vader's castle. Vader very quickly kills the assistant, floats the mask up with the force, and takes it to the dark side cave, and in this well of power, he realizes that the mask is not only sentient, but contains the consciousness of Lord Momen. And Lord Momen starts talking to him, and the mask tells him a story. Long ago, Momen, at a very young age, had force abilities, but he was also an artist, and he loved making sculptures. Just like every serial killer, as a child, he used the force to cut apart his mother's cat and make it into a sculpture. When he was older, he made a statue in the middle of town that was so horrifying that people called him insane and they imprisoned him. But his name had spread through the galaxy until a Sith woman named Lady Shaw broke him out of prison. She trained him in the ways of the Sith, oversaw him making this mask Vader was talking to, and made him stronger. But Momen didn't want to be an apprentice anymore, and he killed her. He looked at the ways of the Sith, and he disagreed with them. He didn't take on any apprentices, only acolytes. He wanted to be the sole master of the Sith. He also didn't believe that a Sith's job should be destruction, because he believed in creating. He was an artist, and he wanted to create art so powerful, so terrifying, that he would be remembered forever in the Force. Like any good Sith Lord, he built a super weapon, because of course he did. It was a big ship that, you know, the big gun on Starkiller Base? Imagine that big old gun on Starkiller Base and stick it on a Star Destroyer, but times 20 in size. That's what the super weapon looks like.
They had sort of like that, something sort of like that in the Marvel comics too at one point.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like the old Marvel comics?
Yeah.
Cool. Moman wanted to decimate a city, pouring the Force into it, causing so much pain and destruction in a single moment that time would literally slow down and preserve the citizens' horror and pain in that moment forever. So he focuses on the panel, and just as he's connecting and using all of his Force abilities and connects with his super weapon, the Jedi arrive to stop him. The city and Moman's body was destroyed when he lost his concentration. The Jedi didn't realize it, though, that his consciousness was saved in the mask. Now, I'm going to give you a little side note here. There's a fan theory running around, but we don't have solid proof of it yet. So the city that Moman is destroying is, like, full of life, and there's trees, and it's green, and it's beautiful, and it's lovely, and has people thriving. And some people think that Moman's weapon caused so much destruction that this world became Mustafar, as we know it. Because when Vader first starts talking to the helmet goes, "Oh, I'm still on Mustafar." But it's not been confirmed yet that it is Mustafar at the time of this recording. Anyway, ever since then, Moman's been locked away in his helmet ever since. Moman finishes his story and tries to possess Vader. And Vader's like, "Ah!" And he's like, "No!" And he throws the helmet on the wall. And the Force carry, and like he uses the Force to carry the mask outside. It's actually really funny. Every time he carries Moman's mask, it's like hovering like 4 feet in front of him. He won't touch it. He's just like, "Nope, nope, don't touch it, don't touch it." And he hovers the mask everywhere, and it's funny. He spots a group of Mustafarians that are nearby, and he snags one of them, shoving Moman's mask on the dude. The ancient Sith Lord now has a body of his own to work with. Moman makes a deal with Vader. Moman is an artist, and he wants to continue to create. He wants to create a great masterpiece. And he has a plan to give Vader a palace that's not only bitchin', but it also helps tune the powers of the dark side on Mustafar to his will. This will also give Vader the ability to connect with the dead, so Vader can see Padme again. Vader agrees to this deal and keeps Moman around, but he warns that he will make Moman suffer if he betrays Vader. What could be either months or years, because the time is unknown, but we know a lot of time passes here. Moman tries many different designs of the palace, and some of them look really dumb, just so you know. One is like a sideways block, and he's like, "Ah, it's beautiful," and Vader's like, "Huh." But he tries many different designs, and they build these palaces, and they collapse, and they build these palaces, and they collapse. And as they build, he continues to possess people. Turns out, this palace that they're making is a tuning fork for the Force. And this tuning fork design is very important. Every time they get one palace complete, Moman, who says that he can't use the Force anymore because he's technically dead, guides Vader through a ritual to try and open the door to death. And every time, a huge storm would rage on the lava planet, not only endangering the people there, but also destroys the palace, and they have to rebuild it. And after each failure, Vader kills whatever host Moman has. It's actually a really funny sequence, because Vader will strike him down, force carry the helmet outside, and grab the first living thing that he sees, and sticks Moman's helmet on it. And these are people like a random stormtrooper to a lava flea. Mustafar has these giant-ass lava fleas that people ride, and he grabs, they're like horses, but for lava fleas. And he actually sticks Moman's helmet on one of these, so this, like, very, this lava flea now can talk, and it's very eloquent. It's very funny. Where am I? And then Moment would be like, oh, wow, that was very annoying, Vader. Thanks. Okay, back to the drawing board. Let's make a new palace, guys. Meanwhile, the people of Mustafar are getting really tired of these storms, and they plan a rebellion against the Imperials. Finally, on the ninth try, Moment and Vader look at the finished castle, and it's the castle that we see in Rogue One. Moment assures that this time, their plan will work, and Vader hopes so for his sake, because there will not be a tenth try. Just as Vader and Moment are doing their dark side ritual, and Vader finally opens the door to death, the Mustafarians attack the palace and start overrunning the stormtroopers. Vader stops the ritual to go deal with the rebellion. Well, it turns out that Moment had lied to Vader. He can still use the Force, and while Vader is gone and occupied, Moment opens the door to the death and says, "Hello, me." And his old body walks out and says, "Hello, me." And he puts on his helmet, and Moment draws his lightsabers, and the ancient Sith Lord Moment is back from the dead. And that's all we currently have for the Darth Vader comics at the time of this recording. There's still two issues left of Darth Vader comics.
Oh, we're hung up. Ha ha.
Huh?
Good. Now everybody's got to read them.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. There's still two issues left that are still to come out. That said, we can make some assumptions of what probably happened based on two things. Number one, we know Moment isn't running around later in canon. We can assume that it's going to stop him. Number two, Moment's mask actually makes an appearance in the first Marvel Lando comic. So, because Charles Soule wrote this comic like 2 or 3 years ago, and that's where Moment's mask actually first came. And Charles Soule even said, "I've been waiting years to tell Moment's story ever since the Lando comic." And he never thought he would have a chance to say it. So it happens in the Lando comic, you know. It takes place around the original trilogy period. It has Lando and Lobot, and they realize that they find one of Palpatine's ships, and it's full of Sith artifacts. And one of the artifacts is Moment's mask. And like in the Darth Vader comics, Moment's mask starts possessing people on Lando's team and starts taking hosts. And when the team is killing each other because he's possessing them, it forces Lando and Lobot to give up on their mission, and they end up destroying the ship, and the ship explodes, and we assume that it exploded Moment's mask. We don't know for sure. So that's all we know about Moment at this time, and that's all we have for Darth Vader at this time. So Moment! He's so creepy. He's like a human-shaped person with this like wild Einstein hair and these like huge eyes. Like human, a huge big bug, like eyes for a human, and he's creepy. And there's a moment where like his mom walks in, and he's like, "Where's my cat?" And she stops, and like he's like floating, like there's entrails floating behind his head, and he's just looking at his mom, and she's like, "Ah!" He's like a little serial killer. He's so interesting, though. I like the idea of like an artist being a Sith Lord.
I like that he's just like. I mean, it just seemed to me, I'm like, oh, it's pretty obvious. This guy's building, like, this whole thing to bring himself back from the dead. Yeah. I'll build you a big tuning fork that brings me back from the dead. But, yeah, he ain't gonna make it.
Yeah. I think he's such a cool character. Like, he was such a heretic that even the Sith Lords feared knowledge of him.
His art was so evil they threw him in jail when he put some up.
Yeah. Like, I kind of want to see more of him. Like, if we ever get into, like, that time period, I think he'd be a really cool character to develop more. He's so creepy, and he's so dark, and I just like the fact that he's an artist, and he wants to create instead of doing the Sith Saint thing, which is destroy. Even though he destroys a town, but he wants it to destroy the city to create art.
Evil art.
And it's just, I find him absolutely fascinating as a character, which he's so different from Vader. Like, Vader so often is just, like, big and terrifying. He just stands there and he's silent. But Moment is a chatterbox. Like, he's constantly talking.
Yeah, he and Thrawn would probably get along.
Yeah, like, he is just very constantly talking, and, like, he's just like, oh, the seventh design has this and this, and it has this, and it's going to be fine. Oh, it didn't work. Okay, well, oh, I'm dead. Oh, and I'm back now. Okay, let's talk about the eighth design now. Maybe if we did this. Like, he's constantly talking. And I just kind of, I like him because he's such a very different kind of enemy that I don't think we, he's like if Sabine was evil. So we know what kind of damage Sabine Wren can do in roles. But, yeah.
Yeah, I have to get caught up on my Star Wars comics.
I would definitely say this, like, honestly, like I was saying in the beginning, like, there's not a bad issue of this series. There's actually one issue I didn't talk about, because it was one of the annuals. It was the second annual, I say tentatively, I don't remember. But, like, that was probably my least favorite issue of this entire series. And that's like saying chocolate is bad. Like, it was
still good. Yeah, it was still good.
Because, like, pretty much what it was is that it's this whole side story where somebody is sabotaging Geonosis as they're trying to build the Death Star, and Krennic is in it, and Galen Erso is the number one person on the list that might be sabotaging this project. And Krennic is like, well, Galen's a good man. He wouldn't do that. So Krennic is trying to clear Galen's name while Vader is investigating Galen. And it was a fine issue. It wasn't my favorite. But it wasn't bad. There's not a bad issue in this entire series. Like, I cannot recommend this series enough. It is, out of, I've read almost all the Marvel comics, I'm behind the main Star Wars line because the end of, I love Jason Aaron. I love Jason Aaron so much, but the end of his run before Gillen took over was just so slow and dry. I just couldn't get through it. So that's the only series that and I didn't read the Mace Windu one because the first issue was very boring. But other than that, I've read all of them, and they're all great, but this one is just on a league above all of them. Every issue is solid and dark and great, and it's what Darth Vader should be. Scary, terrifying, and killing people.
Yeah, they sound as dark as they should be.
Yeah. And I can't praise artwork enough. The artwork and the coloring is gorgeous. Like, even though I've read everything that we know up to the point of this recording, because there's still two issues left that I cannot wait for, like, this is the comic that if I never read any comic again on my pull list, like, if I could only have one comic a month, it would be this comic.
Oh, wow.
Because there's all these different... Like, I've been reading a book called Giant Days. I have every issue since issue one. It's like 40 issues into it. I love Giant Days. It's a wonderful little slice of life comic. It's slice of life. It's fun. It's great. It's won awards. This is the one that I would drop every other title on my pull list to buy and read every month because it is just so fucking damn good. And Charles Soule is amazing. And I just can't wait to see how they settle this moment thing. Because they have two issues left, and I just know it's going to be a knockout, drag-out fight.
I would hope so. It's going to be a mask breaker.
So what do you think of this as a whole? Because this is kind of like Vader learning how to be Vader.
Yeah, no, it's probably the most interesting... Besides the stuff that happens in the movies, this is probably the most theoretically interesting time period in Vader's career, so to me. So, yeah. All this is where you get the just completely beaten and Vader just get it, you know, I mean, he's gotten to the point where he has no bottom, so you're just going to keep learning what depths of evil he'll get involved in.
I also like
which makes for good stories.
I also like the fact that they went back and they had the Rebels tie-in of the Inquisitors. We see the beginning of the Inquisitors, how they work, where they come from. The fact that they didn't even know that they were going to be under Vader and he trains them. Like, I like seeing the early Inquisitors and even, like, the Grand Inquisitor at first fights Vader because he doesn't know who he is. And he himself is so spiteful and so angry and so disillusioned with the Jedi that he even tries to fight Vader and he wants to kill Jakasa Nu so badly. And it's I like seeing where he comes from to seeing where he is in Rebel, where he's a lot more... He's a lot more mellow because he's had, like, what, like, 15 years to chill out a little bit.
Right.
So I like seeing the Grand Inquisitor as a young man, where he comes from.
As an angry young Inquisitor.
Yeah. So I think this is just such an... if you end up reading these, Chris, I have those first two volumes, and I would say I loan them to you, but I love them so much that I won't.
Oh no, I can dig them up if I okay. when I need to. I'm going to end up picking them up when I, you know, as I get to the comic store.
Yeah. A good one if you ever find it. I think it's issue 18.
I bought number one just so it would remind me that I needed to get the rest of them.
Yeah. If you want a good, like, kind of standalone to get you an idea of how the series kind of works, issue 18 is... Because it's harder to find those earlier issues, but if you find issue 18, it's the one-shot story of Tarkin and Mater hunting each other. That one's so good, too, because the entire story is from Tarkin's point of view. So he's, like, analyzing Vader. And it's a fun little story where Tarkin's going, okay, I have a group of people. And he brings, like, 20 people with him. And he's just sacrificing people. And he's just, like, watching Vader kill his men. He's like, okay. So his force range works this far out. So he can't use the force past that at this point. He's like, okay, so if I stop this far out, he can't reach me. And it's just them, like, going back and forth and hunting each other. And it's a good little one-shot series, one-shot story, if you just kind of want to get, like, an idea of how the comic feels. Because it's just as good as the rest of the book, even though it's, like, a one-shot little story of Tarkin and Vader hunting each other. Like, I can't praise this series enough. I love it. I love it so much. I don't know how... Or what's gonna... Well, we were supposed to get Shadow of Vader, but that happened. So I don't know how and what they're gonna do to follow this up. Because it's just been solid. And I just want Charles Soule to write Star Wars forever. I want Charles Soule to write Star Wars forever. And I want Luke Cross, who did the Thrawn comics, to draw Star Wars forever. And most importantly, I want them to work on a book together. Please put Charles Soule and Luke Roth on a book together, Marvel/Star Wars/Lucasfilms, because it would be fucking amazing. And I will die, and I will cream my pants, and I'll be so excited for it. Oh my god. Please do it.
I'm glad that you got the order of dying and peeing your pants right, because that's usually how it happens.
Well, I also said creaming my pants, so that's
oh, okay. I don't think that's how it happens.
So, yeah. That's all I have for Darth Vader at this time. If anything big, major happens in the final two issues,
Just report in.
Yeah, I'll report in because we have, looking at next week, we have one more week of canon wrap up. We can finish all of our canon deep dive wrap up next week. So what I'll probably do is if anything big and major, like that's game changing, happens, I'll let you guys know. Because you know I'm going to buy it.
Future tangent.
Yep. Well, do you have anything else about Darth Vader, Chris?
No, I don't think so.
All right, where can people find you?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our gigantic Jedi library of podcasts, which has not gone dark. It's still lit up. So it's your chance to go through and browse through all the accumulated knowledge of the Two True Freaks. And we also have a Facebook page called Two True Freaks and a Two True Freaks Cantina on Facebook, which is sort of like a forum you can go to and talk on. The main Two True Freaks page will tell you which podcast is coming out. And pretty much, I would say just about every day a new podcast comes out, if not two or three sometimes on some days. So check that out. And we're also on Twitter, Two True Freaks at Twitter. That's run by Gene, the podcasting machine. And also the voice you hear starting out every episode with our opening titles. And so much more. Yeah, that's about it for me. Where can they find you?
You can find me at Jacobs and Jedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Mullinex on Twitter. I also have my website, Key Girl Experience, and I'm currently writing a blog right now, for the newest Resistance episode. I had to take a break on it today because I had to write all the Vader stuff for today's podcast, so, but I'm recently looking at some of the things in the episode, the platform class, which came out last Sunday. And I'm writing a couple thoughts from that, mostly going, where are the aces? Why can't we find out more about the Aces? I like them, and I want to know more about them. And also a point of, not everything has to be at the level of the Death Star in Star Wars. Sometimes you can have very small personal stories, and they're just as important. So I'm working on that blog right now. Hopefully it'll be up in the next few days. You can also find me on Archive of Our Own, if you didn't hear me fangirl last week. I am a Thrawn fanfiction writer. I write fanfiction. And my main story on there is called Forces of Gravity. It is a Thrawn fanfiction. And I'm also the beta reader for Valkyrie Strike, which is my friend Megan's story. So that's why both our names are on it. And I just also have like a series of little flash fictions from Star Wars, from Rogue One and the original trilogy and Rebels, and of course more Thrawn because I'm trash, as you heard last week. That's where you can find me.
Excellent.
Oh, man, Chris.
Well, we're almost done with the canon, and then we're going to have some holiday fun, and then it's going to be Rebels soon enough.
Yeah, holiday fun is coming up. I'm looking forward to it after writing all of these long
Yep, things. We get to relax and do some commentaries and some fun stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So next week, we are very briefly covering the novel Lords of the Sith. Because we're only covering novels that tie into the canon. And Lords of the Sith is technically one of those. I'm not going to cover the full novel because it doesn't impact Rebels that much. The biggest thing is that it features Sham Syndulla, which is Hera's dad. And it makes a couple nods towards Hera. So I'm just going to give you the gist of it. We're going to cover the short story Mercy Mission, which is a short story about Hera. And finally, we're going to get to the actual prequel novel for Rebels, A New Dawn, which is about how Hera and Kanan met. So that's next week. And then we'll be done with our canon dive. Woo! I can take a break from podcasts! These outlines, they've been a lot of fun to write, but man, they've been a trip.
Hope's vocal cords will finally get to heal.
Yes, from all the reading. Though I did have a lot of fun with this week because it was a comic. So I just kind of was just like, let's do this! I had a lot of fun this week because I really liked this one. So, all right, you guys, I guess we'll see you next week.
See you in 7 days.
Bye.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
That rings a... Wait a minute. I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm nervous. Let me see. Oh! Alexander Dumbass! Oh, Henry Dumbass!